I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us so wonderfully over the time we've been doing this. It's a joy, and I can say one of the things I'm proudest of, creating a podcast from nothing and finding an audience who seem to like it. It's an incredible privilege and a delight to do. Don't you think, Matt?
Yeah, I do. And we're very grateful to all of you for listening.
We are.
And we love hearing from you.
Yes, more the merrier. Let's just do them how they
do
can contact
us. Do reach
out
whenever you want. So we can find us on Instagram and Twitter. Though Instagram probably is where I will respond the most. BloodTies_pod. And you can email us at bloodties.podcast@gmail.com. And you can find Geoffrey's details on his website, geoffreywansell.com.
Yep.
.com?
Yep.
Yeah. There we are.
Well, what news? Your brother.
My brother had COVID.
Got the COVID.
Got the vid.
And had to. He's been isolating in his bedroom.
Oh, so miserable.
He just sent me a WhatsApp this morning saying, "Oh, I've just tested positive again."
Oh no! Another day. Maybe he would test negative.
Yeah.
Oh, poor thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the pits if he's stuck in there on the weekend as well.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to protect his
Kitty.
Daughters, my granddaughters, your nieces, from catching it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's getting a little bit strange now because people who've got no symptoms at all are testing positive and can't go out and can't see anybody. It's getting faintly silly.
Yeah, it's a bit silly.
Disgusting. I collected my latest batch of lateral flow tests, which I had to take an awful lot of because you couldn't go into the theatre unless you'd taken a lateral flow test. And I was talking to my chemist, who's a great friend, very helpful. And he says, we have to get to the point when we just say, well, there you go. It's just like a cold.
Yeah.
Or it's like the flu. You know, we just have to get herd immunity, and gradually that'll happen.
I think we were talking about this last week, weren't we? But I think some people are sort of, they don't want to go back to the work and this, that and the other. So some people want all the measures to stay in, or, you know, sometimes I have clients who are like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that because, you know, we'll probably have another strain of thing. I'm like, we're not going to shut all the theatres again. It's just not going to happen.
No. It isn't.
If you don't want to do theatre, please tell me.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because we did theatre throughout.
I know you did.
And, I mean, to some extent, we were lucky to get through. But
you had the perfect thing. But then the theatre didn't shut even when it was bad at Christmas.
No.
I mean, some of them shut because people had COVID, but not because of audiences not coming.
No. If you've got a big cast, for example, a musical, you've got the musicians and the cast.
Yeah.
And one of them gets COVID or two of them get COVID. And I think obviously that's a more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, they had to shut lots of.
The musicals shut.
Lion King, Cabaret.
Yeah.
Cabaret's Cinderella. Back.
Cinderella's shut until mid-February, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
I think so. And Harry Potter, they shut that.
I mean, that's long.
Yeah. But they've just, believe it or not, they've just opened Dirty Dancing, the musical, haven't they? At the Dominion.
That was actually on way back when I first started, when I was like 25, that was on.
Was it?
Mm.
Crikes.
It was at the, it was where Mamma Mia is.
Oh, right, okay. The Novello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before, way back when.
Well, they've got this, the trouble is the Dominion's vast. I mean, it's a huge barn of a place.
Oh, yeah, it's a barn of a place. Nothing ever stays there. Oh, that's Prince of Egypt was on there. Apparently Prince of Egypt was dreadful.
Well, they took it off.
We Will Rock You or something was there for a long time.
Yes,
there, like,
the Queen musical.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually never been there, I don't think.
Oh, it used to be a cinema.
Hmm.
It's very interesting. It is a great big place. I mean, talking about 2,000 seats.
Jeffrey is very au fait with seat numbers.
I am, yes.
When we went to the theatre, he was like, how many seats are there? I was like, I have no idea. It's not a question I ever ask. And you walked in, you were like, not even close. 400 max.
Yes. I've become an expert.
It's your new skills, specialist subject for Mastermind.
Yes. Theatre sizes.
Numbers of seats in regional theatres around the UK.
If you want a really extraordinary story, we were in Stockton at the Globe, which is absolutely beautiful. It's been fabulously...
Miles is going to Stockton in 2 weeks to do I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue.
Oh, yes, I knew they were coming. Mm. They told us they were
Miles
coming.
Miles is doing the whole Clue tour.
Good for him.
Mm, so he will be in Stockton.
Well, let me tell him, it's a fabulous theatre.
Mm-hmm.
It's only just reopened in September 2021. They've taken it back to its Grade 2 listed Art Deco glory.
Wow.
It looks fantastic.
That's so nice.
I mean, it's the most beautiful. And it was left in rack and ruin. I mean, it was, first of all, on that site, first of all, it was a silent cinema. Then they knocked that down and built a talkie cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Then they knocked that down and they built in 1935 this cinema, the one that's there now, except it's not a cinema anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
When you said there were all those rock things there, well, did it become more like a music venue?
It became a music venue. It stopped being a successful cinema, became a very successful music venue. Everybody'd played there. Buddy Holly, Chuck Berry, the Platters, the Beatles, the Stones, the Animals.
The Platters is the most random. Yes. I don't know if anyone knows who the Platters are.
Well, I do.
I don't.
It's an extraordinary venue. Quite spectacular.
Long way away, though, Dad.
It's a long way away. But they rebuilt the theatre beautifully. All credit to...
Where did you stay in Stockton?
Somewhere quite near a Country House Hotel.
Ooh, that gave you a chocolate bar.
Gave me a chocolate bar.
Wasted on Jeffrey, but...
Yes. It's a bit like giving me champagne.
The thought that counts.
It's the thought that counts.
I don't mind if people give you champagne because I can drink it, although I asked Diana if I could drink it. She said, oh, I think we've nearly finished it.
Yes. So, anyway, how did we get onto this? Oh, that's right. It's what was open and what was not. Whether Dan having COVID.
Poor old Dan.
Poor old Dan. Well, we wish him well.
We do.
In every way. Well, this week, I'm quite keen to remind our listeners of a case that a lot of people have forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And it's particularly appropriate because it plays to something about which I have firm views. And that's about, should life mean life?
Okay. So what are we doing this week?
We're doing a man called Michael Sams.
And are we calling it Michael Sams or are we calling it something else?
I think we call it Michael Sams. It's spelled S-A-M-S.
Michael Sams. Here we go.
Michael Sams was born in August 1941 in Keighley in the West Riding of Yorkshire. He was a ordinary family man, not very well educated, but he joined the Merchant Navy at 20 at the age of 1961. He didn't move around very much, but once he came back from the Merchant Navy, he stayed in Keighley.
Where's Keighley?
It's Yorkshire.
Okay.
A little bit north, get it right, north-west of Leeds. Molly's about to get the map out.
I'm absolutely not. I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay.
My UK geography is poor, to say the least.
But you're good at Victorian poisoners. He went back to Keighley from the Merchant Navy and started a heating company, a heating engineer. He was a heating engineer. He did... boilers and radiators and things like that. He was a perfectly quite nondescript, quite small, wavy hair. But he was Somebody once described him, and I thought it was a very good phrase. He was very self-effacing. He wore spectacles. You certainly wouldn't have picked him out in any kind of crowd. He was literally the bloke next door. But fortunately, his business acumen wasn't all that great. And things didn't go well. And he turned to crime. Well, when I say turn to crime, it's mostly car theft and petty insurance fraud and things like that, you know, just to sort of keep him afloat. But he went to prison. And now the story becomes even more bizarre. In prison, Sam's contracted cancer and had one of his legs amputated. So you now have a one-legged man with a false leg.
Right.
His business, when he came back out of prison, failed. And he started selling, another business this is, selling power tools. You can sort of sense the kind of chap he was, can't you? In fact, during this period from his return to Keithley in 64, until he got married a number of times. He had two sons with his first wife, but that broke down when he went to prison. The second marriage also ended in divorce. But he was living with his third wife in Nottinghamshire, not all that far away, when he was eventually to be arrested. He had two sons. Now, what caused Sam's to transform himself from a sort of little jobbing heating engineer or a insurance salesman or whatever else he may or may not have been into a kidnapper is quite complicated. But there can be no doubt that by the beginning of the 1990s, Sam's was becoming increasingly desperate. He's now a man, remember, approaching his 50s. In fact, the first crime is committed just before his 50th birthday, the first major crime. On the 9th of July, 1991, my birthday, incidentally, Sam's picked up an 18-year-old girl called Julie Dart in Leeds. She was a sex worker, and he took her to his workshop, he called it. But then it does grow rather bizarre. Julie was kept in what was described as a coffin-like box after being blindfolded, and the box was chained to the floor. In other words, she was kept a prisoner in a box. He forced her to write a letter to her boyfriend asking him for £140,000. Now, there's no sense that she had a boyfriend who was capable of raising £140,000. And he forced her to write various other equally bizarre notes. And then, of course, he raped her just for good measure. She managed to escape from the box, Judy Dart did, but he'd alarmed it. She didn't know he'd alarmed the box. And he returned and chained her to a roof beam in his workshop. We are talking about a very, very...
That guy sounds like an absolute psycho.
An unpleasant man. Eventually, after she tried to escape and after he'd raped her, he killed her with a hammer and dumped her body in a field in Lincolnshire. He was later to claim that sex workers were easy prey and that he'd killed another, but no evidence has ever been found to that effect. Barely 6 months after this first attack on July 1991, in January 1992, Sam's kidnapped again, this time targeting, would you believe, an estate agent called Stephanie Slater, who was 22. Once again, Sam's demanded a ransom, this time of £175,000, from the estate agent's manager. And believe it or not, the money was paid. But Sam's kept Stephanie Slater for 8 days in a wheelie bin laid on its side, in which there was a wooden box with electrodes attached to it, presumably to frighten her from the possibility of escape. Believe it or not, he raped her, as he had Julie Dart. She was later released and had to face a press conference, even though she was still suffering from the effects of the drug that Sam's had administered to her. One of the interesting things about Stephanie Slater, and as it was to emerge, is that she established some kind of relationship with Sam's. In other words, don't kill me. I'll do what you want. He was, in my mind, truly ruthless. The police had made a tape of his phone call asking for the money. And it was played on Crime Watch. And believe it or not, Sam's first wife recognised his voice. And Sam's was arrested. And his DNA then linked him to the body of Julie Dart, who'd been found, had been dumped in Lincolnshire. Sam's case is comparatively little talked about, although I think it's outrageous in every way. It's frightening, and it's the ordeal that these young women were subjected to is the events. And yet somehow Sam's is, you know, in the great litany of horror in true crime in this country, Britain, Sam's is somehow always forgotten. In fact, in July 1993, he was sentenced to life for murder and abduction. And after his conviction, after, not before, he confessed to the murder. Stephanie Slater, the girl he'd kept imprisoned in the wheelie bin on its side, moved to the Isle of Wight and worked, believe it or not, with the police for kidnap victims. She became a sort of mentor.
Amazing.
To kidnap victims. Although, sadly, she died in August 2017 of cancer at the age of 50. Sam's, despite this nondescript appearance and this self-effacing manner and this ordinariness, continued to act in a violent manner. He attacked one female probation officer who visited him in prison with a metal spike. And it now becomes even more strange. He sued the prison service for losing his artificial leg during a transfer and got £4,000 in damages, to the uproar of a lot of people. I mean, you're talking about a man who's kept two women hostage with an artificial leg.
No, I get that, but I can't believe he got paid damages for losing his leg.
Like. Yes. He sued them again, actually, the prison service, because he said his bed was too hard.
It's prison. Not meant to be comfy.
In 2017... And I think this is...
Although I feel very weird about prison, sorry.
I find this is almost priceless, this is. He claimed that being an old age pensioner in prison was much better off than he would have been in the community.
I mean, he's potentially not wrong.
Well,
it depends what kind of person you are and what kind of life you want to lead.
Nevertheless, Sams remains in prison. He's now been in prison for a considerable amount of time, since 1992. So that means 30 years. He's an old man now. Remind me exactly of his date of birth. Yes, 11th of August 1941. So he's 80.
Are you going to say, does life mean life? Like, yeah. Should he be let out now?
Well, in 2020, the probation service and the prison service decided he was too dangerous to release. Even though he's now, by that point he was 79, even though he's now 80. Now, is he too dangerous to release?
Well, he's probably not physically as dangerous, obviously, but it probably doesn't look great to the outside world if we go releasing
people. I think he would, if there was a move to release Sams, I think there would be an uproar.
But I kind of feel like people should have to pay for themselves and we don't have to pay for them at that stage. I think they should be made to pay rent or something.
From their earnings. They don't earn very much in prison.
No, I just find prison tricky generally.
So Sams is one of those cases, and I think it's worth reminding our audience that somehow it's always under the radar, and yet when you look at prison statistics and you look at how long he's served and you look at how old he is, we're in very strange territory now.
You don't think he should be released, do you?
No. I genuinely don't. But, and here I'm back confronting my old moral question. Given the fact that he's confessed, it's a very difficult area. I mean, should we actually warehouse him? I'm not sure. I've genuinely struggled. I have been against the death penalty since I was a teenager. But there are crimes that I think are so heinous and so dreadful, especially if the perpetrator confesses, that one wonders whether or not they shouldn't, in fact, pay with their lives. It's a very complicated question, but one which I think bears conversation, at least, because we are somewhat conflicted, aren't we? We believe in rehabilitation, and yet we don't.
We do flip-flop around over that one, I think.
Yeah, we say, oh, well, of course, he'll be rehabilitated. But in 2020, after spending nearly 30 years in jail, Sams is not rehabilitated.
Yeah, but this goes back to the same thing, you know, are people born evil, blah, blah, blah. It's the same set of things, isn't it? Like, well,
but there are quite a lot of people in Sams's condition, you know, status in Britain's prisons.
You mean old?
Being old and being there a very long time. And I've argued and said it in my book on lifers that is it more humane to keep a man locked up?
I think by that stage, probably. I mean, if he said it's easier to be an old age pensioner in prison than it is outside, like bearing in mind what life is like now with all the prices going up and energy and cost of living and, you know, lots and lots and lots of people are struggling to look after themselves. And
yeah,
that's the bit I get conflicted about. It's like we, the taxpayer, are paying for him to be housed in, you know, decent conditions. Even if the bed is hard, when there are people out here who are very decent working folk who are struggling to even have their heating on or...
Yes. Or indeed, if they're rough sleeping, pretty hard beds too.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the struggle for me. I have issue with that. Especially if he like brags about it.
Yes.
You know, to make a statement like that you're not showing remorse or...
No.
You're not, no. You know.
I don't think there's any sense in which Sam's has shown the slightest remorse.
I think rehabilitation is a thing as well, as like it has to be a two-way street.
Yeah.
Rehabilitation, this is off the top of my head and probably sweeping generalisation, but potentially is not dissimilar from wanting to give up something. You know, if I smoke cigarettes, you could be like, Molly, smoking cigarettes causes cancer, blah, blah, blah. But unless I want to give up smoking cigarettes, I'm never going to even bother trying to give up smoking cigarettes.
Well, I use an example in the book, Pure Evil, which is now in Penguin, of a prisoner who was being kept in a Scottish prison. And this was told to me by a former governor and now a very distinguished academic. And when he became governor of this particular prison, there was a man kept in the basement who had his complete own set of rooms, you know, sort of Silence of the Lambs operation, his own prison officers, his own room, having committed some dreadful, dreadful, truly dreadful crimes. And when he left being governor, he was convinced that this man would never be allowed out. It was just simply too dangerous. But he'd gone through, time passed, he goes through a period of rehabilitation, of counselling, a lot of help. And blow me down, that man now is alive and well and living in the Scottish Highlands in anonymity.
Mm.
So, you know, there is a possibility.
Yeah, I know. I'm not denying there's a possibility, but what I'm saying is that, like giving up something that's addictive,
yeah,
both the person providing the help and the person seeking the help need to be on the same side.
Yes.
You can't rehabilitate someone who doesn't want to be rehabilitated.
Well, I agree with that 100%.
So if he's like, oh yeah, you know, whatever, I'm actually living a better life here in prison, that's like, he doesn't want to get out of prison.
No, some people don't.
Yeah. Whereas if you want to go through therapy, if you, you know, I listened to a really good podcast about prison. It's called Ear Hustle. I would highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's from inside San Quentin Jail in California. I think I've talked about it before, which is one of the more liberal prisons.
Yes.
And they do a lot of work. So it's a lot of people who have done like very awful things, but are kind of trying to work through to get out. You know, I've seen what those rehabilitative programs can be like, and you know, it's a lot. It requires a lot from both parties, because someone who's committed a truly heinous crime who has to sit down and say, I did this, and try and explain why they did it, you know, that's not easy to do.
No.
So.
But we're left with the same dilemma that we've talked about so many times, and it's incredibly true. Talk to the criminal bar, for example, about this. You know, is a life sentence any kind of deterrent?
No, I don't think so. We've talked about this before. I don't think, if you really want to inflict serious pain and injury upon somebody, I mean, you obviously, you know, might premeditate something to do it in such a way that you hope you wouldn't get caught. You do know what the consequences are.
Okay.
If you do. I was watching, slightly lighten it. Yeah. I was watching a comedy series on BBC I just sort of stumbled across called Defending the Guilty, which is an adaptation of a memoir by someone called Alex McBride, maybe?
Could be.
Which is about him being training to become a defense barrister. Or what's it? I don't understand how it works, but basically him training to become a barrister to defend criminals, mm-hmm, in local courts.
Yes.
That happened to be in London.
Yeah.
But yeah, the exploration of what kind of person you need to be and what you need to do to spend every day trying to get people off who you know.
Defend the indefensible.
Yeah. Have done wrong. Yeah. I mean, these were not, you know, heinous crimes. These are like, you know, aggravated assault or burglary or, you know.
Yes.
But it's still quite a specific career choice.
Very.
To go in and decide that you're going to, you want to make a living getting people who you probably know are guilty off.
Yes. It's not your job to judge their guilt. It's your job to defend them.
Yeah.
To the best of your abilities. That's why the scales of justice are blind, isn't it?
Yeah, but also using quite a lot of canny and wild.
Oh, yes, absolutely. A good thing. So, darling, that was Michael Sams.
Michael Sams, thanks, Dad. It was, it is good to revisit those cases that...
Yes, that one really is under the radar.
Sometimes forget.
Not a lot of people remember.
/ don't know anything about at all.
So, on a lighter note... Is there a lighter note?
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Hope so, yeah. Sun's shining today.
Well, that's a very nice lighter note.
That's good.
Yep, the sun is shining.
It's February.
We're into February.
So, you know, those are good things.
Yep. It's March next month.
Will you be watching the Winter Olympics?
Probably not.
Did you watch any of the Olympics?
Not really very much, no.
We always used to watch a lot of Olympics.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I've been watching Ozark.
Oh, I love Ozark. Very good show.
Very good show, isn't it?
Yeah. I actually haven't watched season 3, but I love the first 2 seasons.
Oh, I'm on season 4.
I don't know if they're off. Are they? That must be the last one, no?
I think it's the last one, yeah. Laura Linney is absolutely spectacularly good.
She's spectacularly good all the time. It's great. I like Julia Garner.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
very good
such
too.
A good actress.
Yeah.
Big fan.
It is. It is a stunning show.
Such a good setup.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning.
It's really good.
So that's what I've been quietly doing. I've been watching Ozark.
Yeah, 4 seasons.
Yeah, 4 seasons. Yeah.
I'm very behind.
I should rewatch season 3 because I've forgotten most of it now.
Nice. Well, any other TV you've been watching? Just Ozark mainly.
Well, I haven't had an awful lot of time.
No.
Now I'm back home, so to speak. I'll probably watch a bit more. When I was on the road, I kept finding myself on television late at night.
We talked about that the other day.
Which is very weird.
Yeah.
It's very peculiar.
Well, good thing you're not going to be staying up so late.
Yeah, quite. I quite agree.
It won't be so bad. Well, thanks, Dad. Thank you to all the people that help us, our producer Sam Brain, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all his hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I couldn't agree with Molly's thanks list better, more. And we have to thank her, too, because this was her idea. So, as I say often at the end of the podcast, do please be careful out there.